Chapter 3. Grab control of your mind and body.
In these pages, you'll learn how your mind can be a powerful ally in regaining a sense of well-being. You'll also discover strategies to cope with your changing body so you can get through the bad days and stick with your diet and exercise programs.
Living with a chronic illness since the age of 2, I became aware early on that I was different. For a long time, that sense of being different also made me feel as if I were broken. It took years of hard work and personal growth to finally see myself as a whole human being rather than as damaged goods. After talking to scores of individuals who have chronic illness, it's become apparent that my struggle with a dented self-image isn't unique. In fact, you're probably facing your own case of the damaged goods syndrome right now. I'd love to tell you that once dealt with, the syndrome is gone for good. Unfortunately, it isn't. But you have the power to keep that ever-present negative self-talk in check. As you learn to live with your illness, you'll discover that your mind can be your best friend. It can help you keep those damaged goods thoughts at bay, stay in charge of your health, and, many believe, heal your body. Your mind can also be your worst enemy. It can keep you locked in the syndrome, reinforcing the thought that you aren't good enough, healthy enough, or worthy enough to live a full life. The key here is that you make the choice. You choose to stay stuck, or you choose to free yourself from the mental anxiety that comes along with illness. In the following pages, I'm going to show you how to select the latter and make your mind the greatest ally as you continue your journey with disease.
The harder you're thrown, why the higher you bounce. Edmund Vance Cook.
Lori's Toolbox 4. A dinner invitation for one. Set a place for you. Throughout my journey of self-discovery, I've read a lot of books. One was called Intimate Connections by Dr. David D. Burns. This book is about eliminating the negative thinking and low self-esteem that can cause loneliness and shyness. I came upon it in my late teens, and one of its points has stuck with me all these years. The author instructs readers to ask themselves the question, when you come home from work, what do you generally do for dinner? Despite my genuine love of cooking, my answer to this question was, throw a turkey sandwich together and eat it on the run. Dr. Burns then goes on to ask, if you had people over for dinner, would you serve them something you normally serve yourself? For me, the answer was an unequivocal no. There was no way I would serve a guest a turkey sandwich on stale bread and ask her to wolf it down while standing at the counter. Nor would I heap a bowl of cottage cheese and say, bon appetit. When I'd have someone over, I'd spend hours planning and cooking. I wouldn't do it for myself, though, because I simply wasn't worth it. With the goal of improving the way you see yourself, Dr. Burns suggests you treat yourself like you'd treat a dinner guest. I have to confess, I don't go to quite the extent that I do for company every night, but I have made some changes. I set a place for myself at the table, and my husband as well, if he behaves. And I make the effort to create a healthy meal. Having company for dinner tonight? Or is it just you?
Overcoming the damaged goods syndrome. Identify the trash. As I said, I believe we each have the power to control our thoughts, even the ones that are most troubling, worrisome, or self-defeating. Taking charge of what seems like a runaway train involves learning how to switch our negative thoughts to positive ones. This takes practice and diligence. The first step is to become your own personal inventory control specialist. Remember that old saying, garbage in, garbage out? Apply it to your brain. Here are a few pieces of trash that may be in your bin. Any of these sound familiar? Negative self-talk. This is that chatter in your head that says, I'm not good enough. What will everyone think? Or, if only I were healthier, prettier, smarter, or, insert favorite self-destructive word here, then I would have a happy life. Often we're so used to saying these things to ourselves, we don't even recognize their droning negativity. If only is a dead-end road that prevents you from living your life to its fullest now. If you hear your mind saying, if only, redirect it. Remind yourself of something wonderful about you, what a good friend you are, or how you made your neighbor smile this morning when you helped with her groceries. Negative media. Stay away from media that sets unrealistic expectations about how you should look and what your life should be like, frolicking on the beach in the south of France, martini in hand. Life is too short to flip even one page of a magazine that tells you you're less than if you're not buffed like Arnold Schwarzenegger, or you're not Amazon woman tall with a 26-inch waist and a hunka-hunka burning love by your side. What would the world be like if everyone looked like the supposed ideal the media relishes? Boring. Negative words from others. You've probably noticed that not everyone knows how to be helpful as you negotiate your illness. Despite good intentions, many people simply reiterate the downside of your situation. Oh, how awful that you're so sick. Or when will you get better? There are also those who just won't treat you as an equal or view you as anything but damaged goods. Stop and think about who your best supporters are, regardless of who is around the most. Then minimize the time you spend with the negative or less helpful people and focus more attention on those who give the genuine gift of friendship. What kind of junk is filling up your head? Hunt it down, pick it up, and take it out. Time to head for the dumpster. There are lots of ways you can replace those negative thoughts with positive ones. Just by saying a kind word or smiling at a passerby, you spread joy, and in the process, squeeze out those I'm not okay messages. Remember, every time you send a self-deprecating thought to the compost heap, you're pulling out another chink of the damaged goods syndrome's armor. Read inspiring stories. I take strength from reading about people who have overcome great obstacles, and I learn valuable lessons by seeing how they did it. For this reason, Chicken Soup for the Soul books are among my favorites. I discovered another great read when I was in an airport on my way to Chicago. I was feeling depressed about my impending hysterectomy and was looking for a diversion. I was scanning the airport bookstore, and staring back at me was Armstrong's It's Not About the Bike. As I said earlier, this inspiring story is about a remarkable man who not only overcame life-threatening cancer, but, shortly after, won the Tour de France. His upbeat, realistic writings were just what I needed to gain the courage to address my problem at hand. Lance lets his readers know that an illness is difficult, but doable. I could identify with him even though I had never been a pro cyclist or dealt with advanced cancer. I share a belief with Armstrong. Anything is possible if you don't give up hope. Laugh. You may not feel like it, but laughing can make your psyche and your body feel better. Several research studies have shown that a deep belly laugh can lower blood pressure, reduce stress hormone levels, and boost immune function. It is also well documented that laughter minimizes pain. And as we all know, laughter creates an overall feeling of goodwill. So go to a movie or a comedy club. Look at the world through a child's eyes or attend a laugh therapy course. There are lots of ways to replant laughter in your life. Humor has a serious side, too. It can help take the power away from your illness by stripping the embarrassment out of the many awkward situations sickness can bring up. Many years ago, I had to resort to the wonderful world of wigs after I lost my hair due to multiple surgeries. I never looked good in scarves. My head is just the wrong shape. I was back to work after my time in the hospital, and I was desperately insecure about my new style. I prayed no one would notice. My boss, Eric, asked everyone to join him for lunch. We all piled in his Ford Blazer, and I rode shotgun. One of my coworkers, Tim, reached for something in the visor in front of me, and his ring caught my wig. When he pulled his hand back, my wig went flying with it. I sat in the front seat, bald and mortified, cursing the fact I got out of bed that morning. But Tim, whose hair was a little thinner than mine, made a quick recovery. "Oh, wow," he said. "Can I borrow this? I could really use it." We all cracked up. Tim's self-deprecating crack broke the tension and made me feel one of the group, not the odd baldy out. Seek support from people who understand. Talking with real people who are in similar situations gives me encouragement and helps me to keep a clear perspective. Likewise, I'm able to vent fears and frustrations that might otherwise lie dormant. It's funny how just expressing your troubles to an attentive, empathetic listener can alleviate your anxiety and provide so much reassurance. Pay attention to what you can control. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Dwelling on things over which you have no control is a recipe for disaster. Here's a simple exercise that helps me when I'm feeling overwhelmed. I write down the situation that is bothering me and, underneath, the actions I can take to improve it. If I can't write anything down, I realize I'm powerless over the problem and I have to release it to faith, luck, or patience. If I can do something, then my written words point me in a clear direction where I know I'll get results. Listen to motivational tapes. Motivational speakers are much like non-religious ministers. They encourage people to achieve their goals, whether in their profession, finances, health, or love. I often pop in a cassette when I'm in the car as a way to endure what would otherwise be a frustrating encounter with rush hour traffic. I've also turned to the voice of a favorite motivational speaker for encouragement during hospital stays. Each time I listen, I undoubtedly come away with more enthusiasm for life. Give it a try. Enthusiasm is contagious. These are three of my favorite speakers: Les Brown, Wayne Dyer, and Marianne Williamson. Check their tapes out from the library. It certainly can't hurt. Take your body someplace positive. Sometimes your mind lets you down. Despite all of your efforts to divert negative thinking, the bad thoughts continue their assault. At this point, I encourage you to enact the take your body someplace positive and your mind will follow concept. This boils down to forcing yourself to get out in the world, even if you don't want to. Have you ever noticed that when you push yourself to do something you don't really feel like doing, once you're doing it, you feel good about it? Perhaps it's getting dressed and driving 30 minutes to a friend's birthday party, attending a charity function, or simply embarking on some household task. You dread the idea of moving, but somewhere between leaving the couch and handing your friend her birthday present, you find you're glad you pushed beyond your initial resistance. Getting out and connecting with friends actually makes you feel better, mentally and physically. The magic of acting as if. But how do you get past that mental blockade that has you Velcroed to the couch? Throughout my life with a chronic illness, there have been countless times I have wanted to stay in bed and feel sorry for myself, marinating in the damaged goods syndrome. I've had to muster every ounce of my available energy, literally pick up my body, get dressed, and force myself to move, take a walk, anything. As a part of this process, I rely heavily on the acting as if concept. If you act as if something you want to be true is already true, there's a good chance that before you know it, you won't be acting anymore. I act as if I have the energy for a walk, and even though I don't, once I'm out the door, I already feel revitalized. I act as if I can't wait to go to the birthday party, and before you know it, I'm laughing with my friends. I learned the technique from my Grandpa Joe. Grandpa Joe woke up one morning, felt ill, went to the hospital, and came home 3 days later blind from diabetes. He never knew he had diabetes until that hospital visit, which was his first ever. After he lost his eyesight, my grandpa never missed a beat. My earliest memory of Grandpa Joe was watching him make beautiful ceramics, many of which I still have today. When he wasn't creating his artwork, he would walk around the neighborhood for hours by himself, his cane leading his way. His senses became so honed on these walks, he could hear the ice cream truck before I could. And since I was in grade school, my ears were pretty sharp when it came to the ice cream truck. He even became fluent in Braille, which he picked up in his 50s. I grew up thinking all blind men hand-sculpted art pieces, walked freely about the neighborhood, and read books. Grandpa Joe's secret? He acted as if he could still see.
Whether you think you can do a thing or you think you can't do a thing, you're right. Henry Ford.
Helping others helps you. When you volunteer and help others, you overcome the damaged goods syndrome by confirming you still have something to offer despite your disease. Although it may feel like a huge undertaking at first, getting your mind off you and placing it selflessly on others can be to the soul as water is to the thirsty. We've all heard the saying, there's always somebody worse off than you. You come face to face with this truth when you reach out and help someone else. I can honestly say I have never volunteered and felt worse for the effort. My friend, Heather Powell, was diagnosed with kidney failure when she was 8 years old. Through her parents' involvement, she began volunteering as a young child. "I became the poster child for the Kidney Foundation," she recalls. After earning her master's degree later in life, the only work Heather wanted to do was to assist others like her. "I knew that was where my heart was. I knew where these people were coming from and that I could help them beyond the social work aspect. I could help because I had lived it," she said. Heather now works as the program director for the Arkansas Kidney Foundation. She recommends volunteer work to anyone with chronic illness. Anytime you get out there and volunteer, you always see you're not the only one with problems. And if you can help someone, it only makes you feel better. Cynthia Perkins is another person who has built a life around aiding other people despite living with several illnesses. She worked as a secretary before she was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, chemical sensitivity, and chronic fatigue syndrome. Unable to return to the same workplace, Cynthia went back to school and got her bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in counseling. After graduating, she began a phone and instant messaging-based consultation business aimed at counseling people struggling with their own chronic conditions. "It took me 9 years to get my degrees. When I finished, my health had deteriorated completely and I was not able to go back to work in any environment. That is when I set up my internet business. For me, it's more about nourishing my soul through contributing information to the world that's not readily available, as well as giving and the satisfaction that comes from that." You may be asking yourself, what can I do? My energy level is so low I can barely take care of myself. To that I reply, volunteer your ear. So often the greatest gift you can give to another person is to simply listen. That's all many people need to gain the strength to make a difficult decision or to make it through the day. It doesn't matter if you feel inadequately trained to solve the person's problem. I heard someone say once, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. If you care, you don't need more expertise than that.
Life is 10% what you make it and 90% how you take it. Irving Berlin.
Lori's Toolbox 5. A shave and a haircut. Battle the body image blues. One of the greatest challenges of living with a chronic illness is accepting the changes in your physical appearance. Your hair may thin, or your skin may break out due to the medication you're taking. You may gain or lose weight rapidly. You may carry scars because of surgery. You may walk with a limp because of arthritis, or you may need a wheelchair to get around. With such ever-present visual reminders of your condition, it's easy to start hating your body. The following suggestions aren't going to change your world, but they'll help a little bit, and on those bad days, a little can help a lot. Get the best wig or scarf money can buy. If your hair thins or starts to fall out, spend as much money as it takes to get a head covering that makes you feel comfortable. If you don't feel comfortable, you won't go out, and if you hibernate, you isolate. A quick way to get an unbeatable case of the blues. Honor your scars. Every scar has a story, and for people with chronic disease, oftentimes the story is about how the procedure that left the scar saved your life. Love your scars for what they represent rather than hating them for how they look. Honor them by rubbing them with lotion after they've healed, or vitamin E. Get used to feeling the rough edges or the bumpy skin. It may be difficult at first to see your scars in this new light, but it becomes easier with practice. Dress up. To combat the temptation to get down and stay there, I make it a habit to dress up occasionally, or at least wear something besides my robe, sweats, or other icky clothes. Put on makeup or shave. For women, a little makeup, especially blush, can do wonders. For men who normally shave, keep it up. If you indulge in a little vanity, you'll look better, which will make you feel better too. Salon treatment. I remember many days when my greatest desire was to stay in my jammies and leave my hair a matted mess. Instead, I would force myself to get my hair cut and blown dry and either paint my own nails or treat myself to a massage or a professional manicure and pedicure. It's amazing how comforting such pampering can be, thanks to the magical healing power of human touch. Say self-affirmations. These short, uplifting phrases can do wonders for your spirit if you believe in them. Their secret lies in the power of positive thinking. Any bookstore offers an array of phrase-packed booklets. In the meantime, try out some of these. I love and appreciate myself just as I am. Every day, in every way, I am getting better and better. I have the ability to create what I want in my life. Healing your body image. Move past the dings. Part of living with the damaged goods syndrome is recognizing your body has a few dings. After 39 surgeries to date, I have more than just a few dings. I joked for years that I've never been older than the number of surgeries I've had. Now that I'm 42, I guess it's time to retire that joke. Since kidney disease stunted my growth, I'm short, not even 5 feet. While some people may think this is cute, my size has caused me a lot of image problems. For one, people treated me as though I were a child far into adulthood. And for many years, I had a hard time being taken seriously. This was difficult since I desperately needed to be taken seriously. I had ideas and career plans and important things to say. But I'd just get a pat on the head and a, "Oh, that's nice, Lori." So I devised a plan. I went on a mission to discover the things that I love to do, and then I vowed to become an expert in those areas. If I excelled, I reasoned, I'd gain my peers' respect and perhaps a few metaphorical inches. And you know what? It worked. Today I often say, I'm taller than I look, and so it is with you. Key to my plan was taking aim at areas where I could excel. I didn't choose to become a pro volleyball player for a reason. until they change the rules and make the ball go under the net, I will never have a future in that sport. So why set myself up for failure? I zeroed in on public speaking, organizing events, educating my peers and healthcare workers, all of which I can do despite my small size, and all of which give me much personal satisfaction. What skills can you become an expert in, despite your body's limitations? Get pleasure from activities your body can do. This concept works on a recreational scale as well. Perhaps you're great at crossword puzzles or you love to birdwatch. Do activities that give you pleasure rather than ruminating over what your body can't do anymore. My passion is crafts. I've been a craft addict since my teens. I made so many items in my youth, in fact, I started taking the surplus with me during my regular trips to the hospital. Surprisingly, many nurses asked me if I would sell my creations. Never one to turn down a business opportunity, I agreed. This began a very peculiar situation. I would be admitted to the hospital, and I would bring beaded holiday ornaments, painted t-shirts, and an array of country crafts. I'd set them out for show on the table by my bed. If I was sleeping, the display worked on the honor system. Many times, I woke up with checks in my nightstand for items nurses had bought on their break. With this money, I reinvested in the art therapy I so desperately needed. Whether I was really talented, I'll never really know. The reality was, I loved it. And I had a captive audience of nurses who liked to shop. Also, they probably understood that it was psychologically important for me that they bought my wares. Even now, when I visit, veteran nurses ask me, "What are you selling today?" The power of visualization. Not only do you have the power to create a positive attitude, I believe you also have the power to heal aspects of your broken body. I'm not suggesting everyone is able to think or pray their illnesses away, but there is strong evidence that suggests people have more control over their well-being than the medical community or our culture currently accepts. For centuries, people have believed the mind has the capacity to heal. Navajo Indians used imagery to encourage ill people to see themselves as healthy. Ancient Egyptians and Greeks believed that visualization released spirits in the brain which stimulated the heart and other parts of the body. Whether or not such methods work from a physiological perspective, if you're open to them, they may be worth a try. They are easily applied to people living with chronic illness, and lots of hospitals are beginning to introduce visualization therapies, especially for people with cancer. The psychological and spiritual benefits alone can make it worthwhile. Ask your doctor if she can recommend supplemental therapies that include visualization. Or do a little research on the internet or your local library to find more information. Visualization is one tool you can use to gain control of your illness, but it's not a cure-all. Keep your expectations real and don't abandon your doctor, medication, or treatment plan. Turning it over to God. Where there is sickness, there is prayer. The two seem to go hand in hand. But why? Anecdotal evidence of medical miracles inspired by prayer abounds on the internet, and hundreds of books have been written on the relationship between prayer and healing. I believe in a higher power, which I choose to call God. My family and I have prayed many times before surgery. When I am sick, friends often tell me that they are praying for me, and it brings me comfort. So praying is a part of my life. What I feel about prayer is irrelevant. It is something that is so personal, you have to check in with your spiritual self and decide if it is something that will be helpful to you. For many, prayers are useful simply because they impart peace and calm. For me, praying is the ultimate way to let go of things that are not in my control. Praying reminds me that someone else is in charge, an idea that I desperately need when my illness is at its worst. It's not surprising, then, that the Serenity Prayer is one of my favorites. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I can't change the direction of the wind, but I can adjust my sails to always reach my destination. Jimmy Dean.
Lori's Toolbox 6. A mini massage for the mind. Silence the clutter. Even if you don't believe visualization has the power to heal, it can still help you. Sometimes our minds are so cluttered living with the dailies of a chronic illness, it's important to step back and clear our heads. Using mind techniques can shift your thoughts away from the despair, fear, and anxiety that go hand in hand with chronic illness. Dr. Wayne Dyer, a psychotherapist and author and motivational speaker, suggests this exercise, which I've paraphrased for simplicity. Picture a basketball digital scoreboard. Once you have a strong visual of the scoreboard, picture a score of 24. Slowly visualize the scoreboard counting backward. 23, 22, 21, etc. Focus your mind only on the score. If another thought comes to your mind, you have to start again. I never could get past the number 16 without thinking about something else. But the first time I tried, I only went to 22. I got better with practice. Louise L. Hay is a metaphysical lecturer, teacher, and best-selling author. She believes that anger, resentment, and guilt do the most damage to our health, and that all healing begins with self-love. Here's one of her visualization exercises. Once again, I have paraphrased. Imagine standing at the seashore looking out at the vast ocean and knowing that this ocean is the abundance of all good things available to us. Look down at your hands and see what sort of container you're holding. Is it a teaspoon? A thimble with a hole in it? A paper cup? A glass? A tumbler? A pitcher? A bucket? A wash tub? Or perhaps you have a pipeline connected to this ocean of abundance. Know that there is plenty for everyone, and that you cannot drain the ocean dry. Your container is your consciousness, and it can always be exchanged for a larger container. Relaxation exercises like these aren't long-term fixes. They're simply mini-massages for the mind that will help you quiet your thoughts so you can breathe through the really tough days. Taking care of our bodies. Diet and exercise. Ugh. Here comes the broken record. We hear so much about diet and exercise, it seems that everyone who's had his 15 minutes of fame has written a book on the subject. My thoughts are nothing splashy or profound. They entail just a few management ideas particular to living with physical limitations. When you have a chronic illness, your diet and exercise ideals may differ greatly from the mainstreams. Each particular illness seems to carry its own diet and exercise guidelines, and I know that adhering to these can be the most daunting of tasks. Staying on track with a restrictive diet. Frankly, I hate the word diet. I prefer to think of it as healthy eating. Unless, of course, you're where I've often been, with kidney failure and on dialysis. In that case, you're not supposed to eat many of the foods that are normally good for you, particularly anything containing potassium, like many fruits and vegetables. Even though the diet rules you've been given are for your own good, it's easy to become disheartened and subsequently obsessed with the foods you cannot have. Here are some ideas to keep you motivated. Distract yourself during craving times. I work on crafts or beading at night, the time I'm most likely to crave the foods I can't have. If you find yourself craving certain foods at, say, 3 o'clock, get up from your desk, take a walk, and get a drink of water. turn down the television, or turn it off. Ever notice how many television commercials are for tantalizing food, and those mouth-watering images are always of something that's a no-no for you? Turning the volume down during program breaks is one way to steer clear of temptation. Another solution is to turn the tube off altogether. Eat when you're hungry. I've also found it helpful to stay mindful of when I'm starting to get hungry, and eating then, instead of waiting until I'm famished. Once I'm really hungry, it's tough to think straight enough to stick to my restrictions. Stockpile good foods. It also seems to make life a little easier when I have ready access foods available for times when I'm really bugged. I suggest keeping allowed foods prepared and ready in the fridge or cupboard for quick relief during weak moments. Get permission to cheat. Why not ask your doctor or nutritionist for permission to cheat on your diet once in a while? Sometimes the flexibility to color outside the lines on special occasions can offer a bit of emotional relief and remind us that the simple pleasures of life can still be ours, even when we have a chronic illness. Experiment with different recipes. There are a variety of websites and books that have tempting recipes that will meet your nutritional requirements. A good place to start is the recipe link at www.recipelink.com. This is a compilation site that links to all things cooking related on the net. It has hundreds of sections, including healthy eating, diabetic recipes, sugar-free recipes, and recommended foods for people with milk allergies. There's also a search engine where you can plug in a food and up will pop its nutritional bio, including calories and fat content. Make exercise fun. As for exercise, I have to admit I rather hate that word too. I tend to agree with Mark Twain when he said, "Every time I feel the urge to exercise, I lie down until it goes away." That's not to say I don't love to play, like dancing till I drop or joining a good game of badminton. It's the thought of going to the gym to exercise that isn't very appealing. In my opinion, keeping motivated to stay fit is 10 times more difficult for people living with chronic disease. Why? For starters, even fun exercise is painful. If I dance all night, my knees are inevitably swollen and sore the next day. Next, we have some days where it's nearly impossible to get out of the house, let alone go to the track. I push through by remembering the benefits of moving my body. Many studies have shown the link between exercise and healing, and quite a few books have been written on the subject. In their book, Healing Moves, Carol and Mitchell Krukoff explore the idea that simple exercise can have profound healing effects. They look at the latest scientific findings about exercise's therapeutic power and present a program to help treat medical conditions, including diabetes, depression, asthma, arthritis, high cholesterol, heart disease, osteoporosis, and cancer. Like me, the Krukoffs suggest making exercise an adventure by swimming, playing tennis, doing martial arts, any activity that makes you view it as a play break rather than a chore. The Krukoffs explain, "Our theme is that, in many ways, movement is an ideal medicine. It's extremely effective, free, or at least inexpensive, low risk, abundantly available, socially acceptable, and simple to do. When compared to traditional treatments such as drugs and surgery, the risk-benefit profile frequently is far superior. The time you spend moving is generally repaid in full by the energy, relaxation, and pleasure that physical activity brings. Daily movement is much more than a health responsibility like brushing your teeth. It's a pleasurable, precious gift that people can give themselves. Taking 30 minutes each day to be present in your body, to breathe deeply, and to propel yourself through space is one of life's great joys, enriching body, mind, and spirit." Even though I know what these guys are saying is true, it's still really hard to get out there and move several times a week. Here are some tips that help me. Have a good time. As the Krukoffs suggest, Do something you already love to do and pursue it with childlike enthusiasm. Team sports are good options. Remember how you used to play soccer? How about gardening? That's good exercise too. Swimming, table tennis, dancing, or riding a stationary bike while listening to a favorite CD also work for me. Be realistic, though, and follow any specific limitations on exercises recommended by your physician. Create an exercise jar. This one comes from my dietitian. She suggested I think of something indulgent I would like to buy for myself, like perfume, jewelry, or a nice massage. Each time I keep my commitment to exercise, I place a dollar in the jar. When I reach the purchase amount, I reward myself by buying the item. Join a team. Join a bowling league, for instance. This is a way to meet new friends and get a little physical activity in the process. If you can't bowl or have a physical limitation, such as back trouble, go to socialize and get out of the house. Your job can be to cheer on your favorite team. Make an exercise date. When I'm chatting with a friend, I usually forget that I'm exercising. Meeting someone at a specific time and place also holds me accountable to someone other than myself, which makes me keep the date. Exercise tips are helpful, but they don't always provide the needed motivation to spur you into action. I personally get pumped up by hearing real people's testimonials of how they beat the odds, so I'll end this chapter with my friend Byron Vuga's remarkable story. In 1999, 30-year-old high school teacher Vuga decided to ride his bike from Huntington Beach, California, to Jacksonville, Florida. He wouldn't be the first rider to make the trek, but he was the first who was hemodialysis dependent with kidney failure. "I want to put a human face on kidney disease," Vuga said at a rally before he set out on the 2,375-mile journey. "I am using my cross-country trip to prove to myself and others that we do not have to be victims of kidney disease, dialysis treatment, or anemia." Vuga's struggle with kidney disease began when he was 16, after he was diagnosed with the glomerulonephritis, a condition that causes chronic renal failure. He's had 2 unsuccessful kidney transplants and, until his recent successful transplant, he had been on hemodialysis for more than 10 years. Despite Vuga's poor health, his dream had always been to cycle across the country. That meant staying in shape, even during hospital stays. "One time when I was in the hospital trying to recover from one of the operations, I had to get out and exercise. There was a nurse's station in the middle of the floor. I couldn't walk by myself because I was attached to so many IV poles. My friends, family, and I would walk around the nurse's station as many times as possible so I could build up my strength each day. My hair was always a mess, so I would be wearing a cycling cap. Sometimes I would close my eyes and envision I was riding a bike instead of being in a hospital." Vuga took his nephrology nurse on his cross-country trip to monitor his health. His aunt and uncle followed along to prepare compliant foods. The day he left for the journey, he said, "Today, this is the beginning of my victory ride." Vuga reached his final destination of Jacksonville, Florida. He symbolized the end of his trek by dipping his bike into the Atlantic Ocean. Today, he is married, has received a successful 3rd transplant, and has a child. He continues to stay fit riding his bike and plans to bike across Australia someday. Like Vuga, you can reach your goals, fitness and otherwise. What would you like to do that you've always dreamed of? Today could be the first day of your victory ride. Keeping positive during hospital stays. One of the more frustrating aspects of living with a chronic illness is the hurry-up-and-wait syndrome. It happens nearly every time you have a medical appointment, not to mention when you land in the hospital. These waiting periods can have a gratingly negative impact on your self-esteem. You start to feel that since your time is wasted waiting, it must not be worth much. And if your time isn't worth much, then you must not be worth much. It's a real mental domino effect. To combat this damaged goods thinking, I assemble my survival gear for those mundane hospital stays. Books, a writing tablet, simple art projects, and stationery or thank you notes. Sometimes I'll take my laptop if I know my stay will be extended and I expect to have the energy to work. It may be slow going, especially when I don't feel well, but as I write letters or outline a presentation for work, I gain a keen sense of accomplishment and comfort, knowing that those hours in the hospital bed haven't been wasted. I also make it a rule to keep the television off, unless I'm tuning into a particular program. Channel surfing can be depressing in the hospital, making you feel like your brain is numb. If I'm too worn down to work or write, I'll keep a few positive books by my side, such as How Much Joy Can You Stand? By Suzanne Falter Barnes. I have felt so down during hospital stays, I have literally had to force myself to dip into my arsenal of distractions and remind myself that in order to get through, I better take my body someplace positive. This is especially hard to do when you feel physically weak or have been prescribed bed rest, but pushing yourself is worth it. I've found by taking my body someplace positive, I've turned even the worst days into passable days. And that's no small accomplishment. Can you see me now? Waiting room tactics to help you get noticed. You rushed to get ready and fought traffic all the way to the doctor's office. You barely made it in time for your appointment, and then there you are an hour later and you still haven't seen your doctor. This can be upsetting. Yet, it happens time and again. You're thinking, hey, my time is valuable too. I wish there was something that I could do to vent my frustrations. Well, read on, my frustrated friend. The following tips are sure to help you fight back against the waiting room blues. If not, you will at least get a chuckle out of them. After 30 minutes, bring a fresh pack of Hubba Bubba bubble gum and challenge yourself to blow the biggest bubble in history. Keep trying. When the gum loses its elasticity, snap it and pop it to the beat of your favorite song. After 45 minutes, if no one understands your bubblegum lyrics, sing the song. Be sure to project your voice. You might even want to coordinate a sing-along with other patients. After 60 minutes, still waiting? If you have children with you, let them practice their favorite instrument. Again, and again, and again. If you don't have a child, borrow someone else's. After 90 minutes, it's obviously going to be a while, so start ripping advertisements out of the outdated magazines. If you happen to have a Sharpie marker, add some new style trends to the fashion kings and queens. After 2 hours, if you've waited so long that your stomach is starting to growl, put your free cell phone minutes to use and order Chinese food. Have it delivered to the waiting room. The aroma of the food is sure to get you some attention. After 2.5 hours, by now you must be feeling somewhat perturbed. Practice the feng shui techniques that you've been hearing so much about and rearrange the furniture in the lobby. Your new environment is sure to clear your mind of negative thoughts. Anything past 3 hours? All of that Chinese food, singing, and physical labor sure can be exhausting. Pull out the mini portable tent and your inflatable mattress and nap away. When you wake up, your doctor just may be ready to see you. Editor's note. The above stated suggestions do not imply endorsement either by the author or by RSN. Please use only for the purpose of a hearty laugh. Can we add a little compassion to the menu? You can probably relate when I say my diet is very difficult. Anyone who can adhere to it deserves some sort of medal of honor for self-control. Sometimes healthcare professionals forget how hard it is, and they make you feel bad when you aren't compliant. I think it's important for them to validate patients' frustrations about sticking to a near impossible diet rather than admonishing them to get with the program. You're non-compliant. You gained too much fluid today. Hearing this makes me want to shout, "Well, when it's 105 degrees outside, you try not drinking when you're thirsty." In my book, non-compliant is not the correct word. It implies you're doing something wrong, when in fact it's very human to eat and drink what your body craves. What would be helpful is for healthcare professionals to say, "I know how tough this is," rather than pretending that avoiding anything with potassium isn't all that hard, or that it's fun to say goodbye forever to chocolate or many fruits. Hey, can we get a little compassion over here? Lori's Toolbox 7. A permission slip to do nothing. Yes, you're allowed. A worthy addition to your toolbox is a permission slip bearing the words, "It's okay to do nothing." So often we feel guilty for taking a step back, sitting down, and simply being still for an hour or even a day. We live in a society which pounds a continual drumbeat. Go for it. Get more done. Make hay before the sun shines. It's easy to become so busy that we neglect to address the feelings and thoughts that are going on inside. I believe there's a happy medium between finding ways to remain vital versus overdoing it at the expense of inner tranquility. When living with a chronic illness, you get tired. The process is exhausting. Listen to your body, and when you need a rest, rest.